Well, we're all gathered together. Thank you, Tom. I'm going to turn the podium back to Marianne and then to Kimberly to continue our journey with Wild Horses, Wild Hope.
Okay, I'm just going to wrap up what I have to say in the next few minutes. And there's so much that we do in terms of healing with horses, and I haven't even touched upon the therapeutic riding, which I'm really not going to do today, but I brought a magazine, if anybody's interested, from the National Association of Riding, and several people came up to me at the break and talked to me about their grandchildren that had autism, and I'm one of those also. Horses have been amazing, amazing therapists and companions for folks with autism because there is that nonverbal sense. And there's a woman named Temple Grandin, if any of you have heard of her. And she is severely autistic, and much of her healing has been through her connection with animals and horses to start with. But now she's become a world-renowned expert on cattle and how to take cattle to their slaughter humanely, not only for the sense of the humaneness of the process, but also because when they go in peace and quiet, the meat tastes better, and there's less cortisol. And so because of the way her brain works and her connection with these animals, she could actually get into how they were experiencing this process. So there's a great deal that has been done, and I encourage you, if you're interested in this therapy, we have HEARTS, a therapeutic riding program. I always say it's up by the dump, if you know where that is, in the sheriff's office. And I'm up there on Tuesdays working with some clients from Devereaux, and then I have my little pet program up in the valley. The San Ynez therapeutic riding program is up on Refugio at the Equestrian Center, and so we have some amazing, wonderful, we could do an entire talk just on what these programs do, but I'm not going to do that today. But I encourage you to go visit if you can. And I have a friend, just one last thing, her name's Jean Schuyler. Do any of you know Jean Schuyler? She used to be my neighbor, very dear friend, and she had a stroke a number of years ago. And I was there Tuesday with my client. We do walk and talk therapy because he can't sit in the office. He's too distractible. And kind of pet the horses. And I looked up, and Jean is back in the saddle. And they have a new lift that picks her up, puts her, you know, out of the wheelchair, puts her on the horse. She rides. She rode for 30 minutes around. They went on a trail ride, took her back up, put her off the horse, and put her back in her wheelchair. And she was beaming. So this is another aspect of what is done with the horses. So it's wonderful. So anyway, I'm going to talk just a few minutes about some work that's very close to my heart. It's work with folks with trauma. And I was telling someone earlier that I never was a centerfold model, but my horse was. In Cowgirl magazine. And it's a wonderful, he's got about four or five pictures in there. He's a beautiful Andalusian named Desano. And this picture you see here is taken with a Marine named Devin Sechi, who's local. She was the program director at HEARTS. And she had had her own trauma through being in the Marines and being a woman. And you can imagine so many women that are in the armed forces have a great deal to deal with. And so we went through a lot of therapy with her, and she became enamored with this therapy because it helped her so much. So we established a program there for a time. It's no longer there right now, but hopefully back again. And I want to share just a little bit of that work. What I really am aware of with folks, particularly veterans, but I work a lot with domestic violence survivors as well. Children work with CALM. We work with children from CALM and families. Their wounds aren't visible often, but they're not just in their thoughts either, but they carry them in their bodies. They carry that pain and that trauma in their bodies. So talk therapy doesn't work. And we have, there's a veteran that he's actually in the magazine. His whole story is told. So I'm not telling anything out of school here. But his name is Bruce, and he's just quite a remarkable man. He's my age, Vietnam era, and he was in Vietnam, and he came back. Some horrible things happened over there. Many of you maybe are from that era, and some things happened that he couldn't talk about. And what's been over 50 years, more than 50 years since he got back. And he had been through every kind of treatment, even electroshock. He'd been through drugs and, you know, therapy, talk therapy, hospitalized, on and on and on for 50 years. Nothing worked. And one day, I don't know how, he loved horses. And one day he went over to Harts, and he just walked up to see a horse, and the horse walked over to him and put his head on his shoulder, and it was like, I come home. And so he began to volunteer there, but he still had the nightmares and all of the things that were associated with PTSD. So I come along, and he's part of this veterans program, and he's riding, and he's having a lot of success, and it's helping him, but it's still, he still has these ghosts of Vietnam, and he's never told anybody what happened over there. There were two instances that he could never talk about. And so one day I said, Bruce, you know, it would be really interesting if you just come in the arena and just kind of play around with the horse loose and let's see what happens. So we, okay. And so we did, and some magic started to happen where the horse connected with him and he began to communicate. And I kind of wrote up a little bit about what happened with him. Because he had this incident during active duty. And the first few sessions, we had him reconstruct the event that had happened. He wouldn't talk about it. I'll never talk about it. And if I talk about it, my world will end and it will be just horrendous. But we thought, well, we bring in these props. And you saw in some of the video, we have stuffed animals and poles and all kinds of stuff that we have that they can use to reconstruct whatever metaphors they want to make. And so he would just, you know, kind of make things and the horses would interact. And he still wouldn't talk about it. And he just said if he ever talked about it, he could never forgive himself for what had happened and he could never move forward. And then during one session, and I'm just going to tell you a little example of what happened, he built a barrier with poles around, like a square around. And in the middle, he piled a bunch of stuff. We used army fatigues and all kinds of things associated with war. He put stuffed animals. He put all this stuff on top. On the very top, he put this black stuffed bear. And he said, that's the horrible thing that happened, and I can't talk about it. And if it ever got taken off my pile of stuff, I don't know what would happen. I would fall apart. And he put it there in the middle, and then he had a barrier all around it about this high that, you know, nobody could get in. It was protected metaphorically. So we're, you know, kind of standing there, and there's horses roaming loose. We usually have 2 to 5 horses just loose in the arena. And one of the horses walked over while he's finishing up building, knocked the pole down, stepped over into the center with all this stuff, knocked it all down like this, and then in its mouth, it took that black bear in its mouth, flipped it up in the air. I kid you not. We didn't notice this before. The bear flipped over on its back, and guess what was on its chest? A big red heart. It was like, wow, you can't make this up. You can't make this stuff up. And he burst into tears. So we grabbed the bear, and that was kind of the end of that session. He never still talked about it, but we came back the next session, and he grabbed that bear for the first thing, and he carried it throughout the whole session. And we even had him stand up on a mounting block one time to get a different perspective, you know, a lot of metaphoric work. And he carried that bear everywhere he went with the horse. And then finally, about the next couple of sessions, he went over in the corner with a bear, and he started to talk to the horse. And he told his story to the horse. But he never told it to a human, never had, even his wife. The next session, he said, "I'm ready to tell my story." And he told us his story. Now, I imagine it was something really, really horrible. And it wasn't quite as bad as what I had imagined. But still, for him, it was pretty traumatic. Now you can't stop him from telling his story. And he tells his story because he wants people to understand what healing took place in his body viscerally. The horse allowed him to open up and go inside not only his mind but his heart. And then, because of all this had happened, he never got his purple heart. And so 50 years later, a group, including with his permission, arranged for Lois Capps to come out to Hearts. I'm going to cry when I tell this, and present his purple heart. So thanks to this horse, this man is healed. He tells everybody about it, and he got his purple heart 50 years late. So these are the kinds of stories that are so beautiful, on and on and on, that happen because these horses, somehow, if we go back to that quote with Rumi, remember at the beginning, "There is a field out there, I will meet you there." It's a different field, a different coherence of beyond ego, beyond duality, where the horses can go because they don't think in those terms and allow us to enter into that space and that field beyond right and wrong, left and right, yes and no. And that's where we take our folks with these horses. And I'm not going to, I've got all this stuff I can talk about, the military and what we do with trauma. But just, you know, kind of briefly that, you know, the healing takes place, and we use what's called a vagal therapy. We tuned into that nonverbal behavior, and because the horses read that behavior, and we have, I won't even go into a neurological explanation, but there is one, actually, and there's something called mirror neurons in the brain that they tune into and adjust behaviors accordingly, and we become part of their herd. Our brains and our hearts connect with theirs, and I know Pat's probably spoken to you about heart math maybe at some point, I don't know, but they've done studies where they've actually found that the heart of the horse has an energy field that reaches out 8 feet, and that we can step into that energy field with our heart and become part of that energy field and resonate, and of course take on their calmness and their demeanor, and learn to balance our heart rate. And so there's some amazing studies now that are being done that this isn't just magic, although it feels like it at times. It's mystical, but it's also scientific. So we know that this really works. And I'm a scientist as well as probably a magical child still, but it works. And this is one of our, we had a group of veterans that were homeless, and they were also part of the legal system because they got in trouble. And this is an 85-year-old homeless veteran from World War II. And he was in prison for 43 years because he did some really bad things. Are you ready? Kind of to feed his addiction to betting on horses. So he gets to us to do horse therapy. But it was amazing to watch him in that harmony and that synchrony. And he finally finished his tour of duty for probation, and he was able to go back and be with his family. But he was delightful. And then another, just very quickly, a lot of what we do is through metaphoric learning. It's not just about the feeling and the connection and the nonverbal and the non-dual relationship, but we take it beyond that because, as I talked about earlier, it's not just about contemplation, but it's also about action. So the metaphors allow you to start healing through the opportunities to make metaphors in your life and understand what's happened, and the horses respond energetically somehow, again, magically, to the incongruity, and it's quite amazing. So here's another one of our homeless vets. He had Parkinson's and addictions and homeless, and he'd been quite a wealthy man at one point, but he's lost everything. And he had heart problems, and he was very scared, I mean, what was going to happen to him. So we asked him to build something over in the corner there, that blue thing. It's actually a snake and all kinds of awful stuff that he built that was the stuff that was holding him back and making him scared. And he has this rope that he connected. He couldn't walk very well, so we let him sit in a chair. And this rope was his connection to all this horrible stuff in his life that he couldn't let go of. And then over on the other side, we had him build, what would life look like if it, you know, you could be healed of all this? And there were all some wonderful things in there, including a beautiful red stuffed heart. And so notice where the horses went. And that wasn't lost on him. The horses gathered around where his heart sense was, not where all the problems were. And it allowed him to let go of that rope and that connection. These are just some little examples. Here's another, just sort of a series. The same person who, she was a therapist, that wanted to establish this connection with the horses so she could make some life decisions. And so she began to build her stuff that represented some of the choices that she made. And here's some of the things that she had. And then the horses would come and interact with that. And I just love this one slide here, how she really became part of the herd. And, you know, I just, you know, kind of want to end my piece just very quickly. And I'm looking at the time here because I want to give Kimberly some time. But I want to just show you one really very quick little snippet, and then I'm going to turn it over to Kimberly. What? Oh, I'm going to introduce my dear friend Kimberly after you read this quote from Mother Teresa. And not all of us can do great things, but we can do small things with great love. And I think that's what each of us, in our own way, with our soul blueprint, we've been given this to do, and I'm fortunate that I found what I could do when I was about 8. I know Kimberly has found what she's meant to do as well and will share with you. And I'm going to introduce her with a quick 1-minute snippet with your that video, because it says it much better than I can say it. And I got one more chance at the video here.
When I first started coming out here, it was definitely hours and hours and hours out in these hills, always with my camera, but sometimes it would just be time just observing them. I just started to see something, I think, through the lens. I started looking at them a different way. You know, when you're looking at something through a camera, you see the world differently.
I want people to be inspired to care, to make a difference, to change, to know that this is... They emulate so much that I just hope that's what I can capture when I'm with them. I just knew from the beginning I didn't want to be the one to show the dark side of it. I wanted to be able to show the beauty, because I feel like beauty will inspire change.
Is that good? Everybody in the back? Okay. Hi. It's very hard to follow that video with the little boy. I'm feeling that deep inside at the moment. Thank you, Marianne. That was a wonderful speech. Thank you for organizing this, and thank you for letting me speak with you all for a few minutes. As both of Marianne and Pat mentioned, that I am a wild horse photographer. I've been engrossed in this issue since 2004, and what's been really lovely about today, Marianne, is that I the last couple of years have gotten a lot deeper rooted. I'm obviously still a photographer, and it's the work that I do, and I spend a lot of time on our public lands, but I've gotten very deep rooted in the issue that wild horses are facing, and it's not a very pretty issue. It's dark, it's got a lot of conflict, a lot of crisis, and so today it's been really nice to sit here and be immersed again in the beauty of the horse, which is what brought me to this in the first place. Like Marianne, my mother says my very first word was horse, and I only had briars as a kid. I wasn't allowed to have horses. In fact, my cousin just last night reminded me that on my Facebook page when I had posted something, and she said, you know, it's really beautiful to see that you turned what you loved as a child. And I don't know my cousin very well. I think I've met her twice. She lived in Washington. We lived in Minnesota. And she said, I remember visiting you when you were very little and your entire bedroom was covered in briar horses and pictures all over the wall. So somehow I came full circle into what I wanted to do as well. I think what I will share with you is a few stories that have happened with me in the wild. So being a horsewoman myself, there's a lot of similarities and differences between our domestic horses and the wild horses. But very much on the lines of everything that Marianne has just been sharing, I have some pretty amazing stories as well. And I think what, for me, what returned me to a grounded place, a place of faith, of hope, of love, is definitely when I'm in the wild. There's a rhythm to Mother Nature, in my opinion, that can't be found anywhere else. A lot of people call it, your higher powers, very different names, labels were mentioned earlier about a lot of things. And for me, there is nothing more sacred, there is nothing more beautiful than sitting on 1.2 million acres of territory and not a human being in sight. It is, and I know it sounded funny to say it that way, but there's something so quiet and so calm, and at the same time, everything gets loud and in focus for me by listening to the crickets in the grass and the horses listening to the wind and the wind speaking to me, and everything comes into such a full range of emotion of what's right and true in the world, and I don't understand why we're losing such a sense of respecting or valuing what's wild anymore. So therein lies how I got so involved in the issue, because we don't value wildness. And I hope that through the work, through this type of work, we can bring that back into everyday life. I'm going to start with this horse since he's right behind me. he was wild caught. So he was rounded up by the government, and because of his incredible beauty, if you were to stand in the presence of this creature, he's one of the horses that changed my life, really. It's the same horse that's in this photo as well. He's from Sulphur Springs, Utah, which is a very rare area, very rocky area, very, very hard area to get to for us humans. And he was wild caught, and because of his beauty, in the adoption process, people thought he would make a great sport horse of some sort, you know, cowboy horse, reining horse, show horse, whatever. And this horse's spirit was impossible, the word is used, to break. I prefer the word gentle. But this horse, nobody could get this horse to work with human beings. He went through a number of situations. He was abused incredibly badly. He was beaten, he was dehydrated, he was tied to the ground for days, was not allowed to get up. Tarps were thrown over him, and I color it with this. There's a reason for that, and the story gets better, I promise. So he went through a variety of situations, and he finally came into an equine-facilitated therapy program. And even in that program, it wasn't working. The therapist that worked there kept saying, this isn't working out. This horse has been through so much. We have to find a place for this horse because he's not really going to work in this program. And one therapist said, I have one more situation I want to try with this horse. And they brought in a native boy from Alaska who was about the story's been revealed to me, about 6 or 7 years old, and he had been abused sexually and physically his entire life from the moment he was in the crib. And he was in this program. Chief is what this horse has been named because he's now in sanctuary, had never once stepped foot towards a human being ever in the round pen. And these, as Marianne has colored for you all, they're very safe, sacred places. When the session was about to finish and the therapist came in to step towards the child, Chief stepped in between the therapist and the child. I still can't die. I've told that story for 12 years. And it revealed so deeply that he was coming in to protect that little boy. And the fact that this was a native horse, in my opinion, and this little boy was a native boy, and what the two of them had been through was so obvious. And so it's just a testament to the will of what these horses do. So he then found sanctuary, and now he lives. In fact, the video that you see me photographing is where he was at, and he's been granted a herd of mares, and he never has to be around humans, go to the sanctuary and visit, but he does not have to deal with them. He doesn't come near anybody. He is very inquisitive with you, but he's not interested. A lot of the other horses at the sanctuary get curious, and you saw the mare come up to me and sniff me, and that won't be him, never. But that's one of the stories that just, again, follows up on what she's been talking about. As far as the wild goes, there are numerous stories of things that I have experienced when I've been out there. When you're in the wild and you're on, like I said, 1.2 million acres of territory, you've spent all day searching for horses, and then you find them, and their first reaction is, we don't want anything to do with you. It's a lot of work. So I have to be very careful of how I approach them, what my intention is. If I'm going to point a lens at them, that's very aggressive. There's a whole dance that has to happen in order for me to get within any distance to be able to photograph the horses. And there was I've gone to numerous areas. I've lost count at 25 or 30 different public land HMA areas. HMAs are herd management areas. And I was in Salt Wells, Wyoming, which is a very large area, very hard to get to the horses. And a year prior, the horses had been rounded up, and 2,600 horses had been rounded up. So it was a massive number. It was a massive roundup in an area that those horses could flee from me so quickly. And I had set out to go to an area past that called Adobe Town. I miscalculated my drive, and it was going to be another 3 hours, and I'd already been in the car for 5. And it was getting close to the end of the day, and I have to be careful because you have no cell service, and you don't want to pop a tire when you're 8 hours off the beaten path. So I decided to turn around. The reason I was going to go to Adobe Town is because I was really, really wanting to photograph gray horses, which are white horses. And this area is known for them. It's Adobe Town. It's called that for a reason. It's got beautiful landscapes of red rock, and it looks like the Southwest more than Wyoming. And so once I realized I had miscalculated my distance, I decided I had to turn around and go back to Salt Wells, where I knew there were some horses, and salvage the day and come home with some work. And I had just said, a girlfriend was with me, and she was driving, and I had just said, gosh, I'm not going to get my unicorn today. I'm so sad. And as we were driving, we went down an undulated hill. As we came to the top of a hill, in the middle of this dirt road stood a white horse. And there was, you saw in the video, there was a beautiful picture of a white horse just looking off to your left. That was him. And I obviously shrieked and grabbed her arm and said, how are we going to do this? It's one single horse. I'm sure he's going to flee. This is going to be impossible. There was just a roundup here. This is never going to happen. I got out of the car with a large piece of equipment because I had, in this area, I have to use a tripod. I can't use just a single lens and a camera. And in my mind, I thought, this is it. This isn't going to work. And as I said that, and as I quietly shut the door, I told myself, stop. Anything is possible. You just spent all day not getting very many images. You have no idea what's going to happen with the remainder of your day. And this horse took me on a journey like you wouldn't believe. The amount of images that I got from this animal are unbelievable. He not only did he not run off, and our truck stopped very abruptly, so he had every reason to get out of Dodge. And let me tell you, they can run really fast out there. And he stood still. I obviously took photographs and do what I do. I talk to them in a very grounded, quiet voice. And he then walked off. But he walked off in such a way. You know when somebody walks away from you and they're done speaking and they're done with you. And when somebody says to you, would you like to come over here? I'll get you a cup of coffee or I'll get you. And that's exactly what this horse did. He took me over up a cliff. And down in the bottom of this gully was his entire herd. It was 3 gray mares, 3 gray yearlings, and 3 gray foals. I kid you not, you can't make this stuff up. And I couldn't believe it because the foals were so little. And generally, especially with given that there had just been a roundup, and with baby foals, the alert is on out in the wild. Their sensitivity and their keen awareness is something like you have never seen before. Our domestic horses have it, but it is heightened so well in our wild horses. It's hard to explain. After spending time photographing them from a new perspective, I'd never been able to photograph horses from above down below, so that was exciting for me. Then he again said, I'd like to show you something else. And he took me across the road, a good distance away from the family, which surprised me, and over to this plateau. And he, as a photographer, he walked up to the plateau of rocks, got his front feet just up on a distance that made him even that much grander, and literally looked out into this valley, that area I hadn't seen before. And I've covered this area for years. And it was as if he was saying, here is my kingdom. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. And so I think I'm just sharing on the journey that these creatures can take us on. I think that the wild, whether it's horses, wolves, anything in the wild, have so much to teach us if we're willing to listen. And that particular day was definitely one of my most, I have lots of them. That was definitely one of my most magical days in the wild that I will never forget. And that image, I get to share that story over and over again. And it's helped a lot in saving and raising funds for rescuing horses. So I think I'll end on that. Thank you all for your time.
Hard to say thank you adequately for this truly magical morning. Thank you, Marianne. Thank you, Kimberly, for taking us on this journey. It brings to mind words penned almost 200 years ago by Thoreau, who said, "In wildness lies the preservation of the world." I think we have seen this true in the year 2018. They've given us an unforgettable glimpse of a way of life that our species seems to have forgotten. So I'm hoping that we can take that glimpse home with us and keep it alive with the new kind of understanding they've shown us. Next week, we will be welcoming Dr. Michael Kearney, a noted physician and author whose work with palliative care and hospice is known to many of us. He'll be speaking on the themes found in chapters 3, 8, and 18 about waking up to the calling of life and living out the situations it gives us with awareness and consciousness, some of the awareness and consciousness that we've heard about today. I hope we'll see you all here. Thank you for coming, and thanks again to Marianne and Kimberly. It's been a wonderful morning.